This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome in on a Friday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is your program of choice. Thanks for joining us, as we'll be with you here until 3 Eastern time this afternoon, 6 days away from the draft, and we are ready to get this thing rolling. My God, the misinformation flying around right now. Lying season is well underway across the league.
It's so bad.
Well, we understand that there's a measure of strategy to it. I get that. Totally understand it. Don't want to lay your cards on the table, so to speak. Right. So I understand that and the reasons for it. People like us, though, have to sift through all of it
right,
and decide what sounds legitimate, what makes sense, and what is just outright lying.
Here's the thing. No matter what teams tell you, it all comes down to just a few factors. One, if there's nothing on their board that is better than what you can offer, they're not going to trade.
Okay.
They have to want what you got more than they're going to trade. And, of course, every pick, including the Chicago Bears' first pick, is up for sale if you want to go that high. But you may be paying 5 ones for it or something. It's all up for grabs. Don't let them kid you. Everything is for sale. All you got to do is make an offer. They can say no, but that's the way it is. And I'm telling you right now, everybody wants to trade up. Everybody would trade in the top 10 if they could do it for a bag of footballs. But it's more expensive than that.
A little bit.
So there you have it. It's that simple. It's that simple.
Yeah.
Do you want what's on the board more than you want what they'll take for it? That's it. Let's go.
Among the rumors that are swirling, because I think the top 10 is going to be fascinating next Thursday night, not only because of the quarterback needy teams that are at least in the top 10 or just outside the top 10, but because of the receiver talent at the top of the draft too. Mm-hmm. And there are some who believe, and this would probably be a worst case scenario for the Bills down at 28. Worst case scenario for the Bills, Steve, quarterback 1, 2, and 3, but then Arizona stays put, doesn't move out, takes Marvin Harrison Jr. The Chargers, they don't move, and they take Malik Nabers. The Giants, okay, they take the 4th quarterback. Tennessee Titans either take an offensive tackle or do they take Rome Odunze? Because all they have at receiver is Treylon Burks and DeAndre Hopkins, who's probably in his last year.
Mm-hmm.
And now you get down to the Falcons. They're taking a pass rusher. Bears at 9. Top 3 receivers are off the board before you even get to pick 9. So are they taking Brian Thomas Jr. at 9?
Right.
Or are the Jets at 10?
The top 10 of this draft, it's
that's not unrealistic, right?
No, it's not at all. Not at all. And here's the thing. This draft should be really intriguing because of the amount of quarterbacks at the top of it, right? Now, you can interchange 2 or 3 guys, you know, like J.J. McCarthy and Mike Penix, you know, and all that stuff, in with Drake May and Daniels and Williams, Caleb Williams. You can interchange all those guys, but the fact that there's 5 of them up there, you would think, man, this is going to go crazy. Well, not really, because the draft worked out that all the teams at the top need those guys.
Yeah,
and what so it's not going to be. Remember when Josh and Baker and, you know, Sam Darnold come out in 18? There's a lot of space up there, so there was some shuffling going. It was much more intriguing than this one is.
Yeah,
and we were kind of neck deep in it because we needed one of them. That was better.
And our producer, Jeff Foltenac, just reminded me that they did spend $100 million on Calvin Ridley, the Tennessee Titans. So maybe they don't take a receiver at 7. But 9 with the Bears, yes.
Right.
And so you're not even out of the top 10, and the top 3 receivers are off. And what that does to me is it accelerates where Brian Thomas goes off the board.
Right. He might be a top – talent-wise, he maybe should be in the 15 to 20 range. Need-wise, he's top 10.
So what you really, if you're a Bills fan and you want to have even a sniff at Brian Thomas, or perhaps even A.D. Mitchell, if they're in your top five, you need the quarterback-hungry teams to be aggressive and get up high and push those other teams down that could potentially be interested in a receiver. You need Minnesota getting aggressive, and you need Denver or the Raiders to potentially get a little aggressive. Maybe the Raiders feel it necessary to hop over Denver. You know, division opponent also needs a quarterback. You know, maybe you need the Raiders to get aggressive and leapfrog them.
It's really interesting. 11, 12, and 13th picks of this draft. Minnesota, Denver, Vegas, all looking for a guy. But they're on the outside looking in. They're not getting to the top three. So they got to find one of those guys that they like.
Who's fourth or fifth.
And they got to get ahead of each other to make sure they get it. Minnesota's sitting there at 11 going, are we really going to get a guy? What happens if Denver at 12 trades with the Jets?
Yeah, and leapfrogs them.
Yeah, or Chicago or Atlanta. You know, one of those teams just ahead of them, like the Bills did with Dallas last year and got Dalton Kincaid. Sweet move for us, right? But All of those teams, and Minnesota's got two first-round picks. They've got the 23rd pick, too. So there's a lot in this. And this first round is scheduled to go from 8 until 11:30, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They got no shot. They got no shot at getting it in that window.
So I'm going to say, if I'm just trying to crawl into the brain of Brandon Bean here, I don't think there is a scenario where they try to get into the top 10 to get one of the top three receivers.
There's no way.
I don't think he tries to make a move up the board unless Brian Thomas gets past the Colts at 15. If he gets past the Colts at 15, who could take a receiver.
Right.
If he gets past the Colts at 15,
then he's on the phone.
Seattle at 16 doesn't want a receiver. Jacksonville, probably not. Cincinnati's keeping T. Higgins this year. Probably not taking a receiver in round one. They need offensive line help. Rams, probably not. You got Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua. You got your top two guys. Steelers, perhaps. So I think if he gets past Indy at 15, I think Brandon Bean's on the phone with the Seahawks, the Jags, maybe not the Bengals because they're too stiff a competition and maybe they don't want to help the Bills. So maybe that's a waste of time. So maybe the Rams at 19, you know, like Seattle at 16, Rams at 19. You're on the phone.
Right. That's right.
I think that's where it happens. Brian Thomas slips past the Colts at 15. I think Brandon's on the phone.
And I don't know what you'd have to give to get up there.
Well, we went through that, didn't we?
Yeah, we've
it's
been
the
through
pick
it.
Pick of 28 and next year's two.
And one of next year's two.
Probably the high one.
Probably maybe the low one. Maybe your pick at 22, not the Minnesota pick at 22. That would be plenty if, depending on what they, you know, what they value it at. But they can make it happen. We talked about letting them, you know, having it happen. But oof, it's a big jump.
Yeah, and I don't think he gets past 15 if those top three just get all jammed and crammed between 4 and 10.
Right. Then is
because then
everybody who
the demand
wants
for him increases.
Everybody gets desperate to get a guy. And it becomes hard. It's hard to sit there in that draft room just with your guys and all you've talked about and watch other teams get to pick the guys you want.
So now I'm going to try to warm you up to my alternate plan.
Oh.
Okay? Let's say that
if I'm ready for this.
The unfortunate happens and the top three wideouts go between 4 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Thomas is off the board 15 to the Colts.
Okay.
Okay? And A.D. Mitchell might be the only other receiver you got a first-round grade on. And let's just say he goes off the board 23.
Okay.
And you're sitting at 28. What if I told you you could move out of round one and go to round two, pick up a third round pick in the process, And in the second round, you pick Xavier Leggett and Ricky Pearsall. How would you feel if you moved back and did that?
That'd be great, except that Ricky Pearsall and Xavier Leggett are going to be up there too. They're never going to get there because of the run of the same guys that left you hanging. The same teams that are going to be out there wishing they could get one of those other guys that are taken already are going to be just as desperate, and they're going to take those guys. They're never going to get to 60 and 30-something. I mean, I get it. Now, listen, if they got Xavier Leggett and Ricky Pearsall, I'd be riding piggyback with you.
Yeah, because I'm doing laps around the facility.
I'll be on your back.
Yeah.
Hitting you like a rented mule. Let's go!
May only do one lap.
Right, but that's, yes, I would be, equally thrilled with that. Because I think, I like Leggett. You know I like Leggett.
Yeah.
And Ricky Pearsall.
He's a little raw, but he's talented.
Ricky Pearsall is a bigger Ladd McConkey.
Yes.
He catches it. He runs well. He's 0.02 of a second slower in his 40. He runs a 4.41, and McConkey runs a 4.39. Ricky Pearsall can catch it. He's like a wide receiver version of Kincaid. I mean, you throw it, he's a vacuum, man. That guy's pulling it in. So all of that stuff said, yeah, I'm okay. I'm with that. I'm all about it, Brownie. I'm all about it. I don't think that can happen, but
I know there's a risk when you move back, but as long as you got enough guys that you like.
Yeah. There's always guys you like. I mean.
Well, let me ask you this then. What do you stack for me the likelihood of these three things happening? Okay. Or actually, yeah, these three things happening.
All right. Thing number one.
The likelihood of Brandon Bean trading up, the likelihood of him staying right where he is at 28, and the likelihood of him trading back into the second round. Stack those in likelihood of occurrence, 1, 2, and 3.
All right. One is up. Two is down. Three is stay put.
So you think it is most unlikely
that he stays put?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I'm in fact, because I still don't think I'm working that weekend. So in fact, I'm scheduling my party around that. I'm not starting my party until like 10.
But what if he trades up?
We'll be on. We'll be.
It'll happen early.
It's not going to happen that early.
Okay.
Like I'm not even. I'm not even winding up until they get to 20 something.
He traded up in 4 of his 6 drafts for the Bills in round 1.
That would be 5 of 7. Then it would be 4 of 6. Okay, 4 of 7 be a little over half. Oh, man.
So the Rousseau draft, he did not trade up, and the Ed Oliver draft, he did not trade up.
Ed Oliver, he's 10.
It was 9, yeah. He was pick 9.
That doesn't even count.
But he sat and held his water and picked Rousseau at pick 30.
No, he's going to – most likely he's going to trade up a couple spots. And second to that is getting out of there and trading down. I don't think he's going to like the board if all those guys are off of it. He'll trade back. Yeah, before – I don't know, though. It's hard to trade with anybody.
Yeah. So
I think the most likely thing is trading up a couple of spots.
Let's say it's not a receiver at 28 because the receiver value is poor.
Because they took all of them.
What has unfolded.
Let's say they took 8 guys before the Bills picked.
Or even 5.
Whatever.
Let's just say the value on Buffalo's board when it gets down to them at 28 is horrible at receiver.
All right.
Who is your alternative wild card player that you think could be 28 for them, or even just a position? Yesterday, I was thinking perhaps edge rusher.
Yeah.
But there's only about 3 or 4 that are expected to be first-round picks, so it's not a long list, and those could be vanished by then, too.
Now, if you can get the top one of the top 2 edge guys because there's tackles and quarterbacks and wideouts gone, and they've had like 1 edge rusher go, yeah, do that. If it's not an edge rusher and the defensive tackle's gone.
You might be able to get this number 2 defensive tackle. Byron Murphy will be off the board from Texas, but
right.
Johnny okay. Newton could be there.
Right. I'd take Johnny Newton from yeah. Illinois. Yeah, he's a pretty good player.
I think the only other option there could be the kid from Iowa.
DeGene?
Cooper DeGene. Yeah. Who, I believe, is a safety, not a corner.
Yes, I agree.
But he could be one of the most versatile safety chess pieces out there, which is why he's meriting consideration at the bottom of round one, because, I mean, I don't want to put too much pressure on the kid, but I think...
he's got to save the franchise.
No, he can...
as a safety.
What I'm saying is his versatility, he could be like Poyer in his prime. He can come down and cover a slot receiver.
Right.
He could be a hybrid linebacker in a sub-package situation, like we saw Poyer do last year.
Yeah.
And he can play safety, and he's interchangeable. That's everything that Poyer did in his prime.
Yes, that's exactly right. He is a very willing and physical tackler. He's very good at it. He can play in the box. He's comfortable up on the line of scrimmage. He plays well in space. Plays well on the outside. I mean, I like the guy. No question about it. He's a prospect for sure.
I think if they get stuck at 28.
I don't know if I want to take him at 28.
I don't want to either. But if they get stuck there, can't move out, receiver value's garbage, I could see them finding their way to him.
Yeah, I'm not saying I don't think safeties are important, because they are, but man, oh man, that would be, for me, I would get it and I'd be okay with it, but that'd be a big belly flop. I mean, I like...
that would be a womp womp.
Yeah. I mean, I like Cooper DeGene. He's a good player, and it would be my expectation.
But we have been so hyper-fixated on receiver.
If he was on our roster, if he is on our roster at the beginning of the year, I would expect him to be on the field opening day in the back, in the defensive backfield. Yeah, him and Mike Edwards. I think those two, that's got a chance of happening if he's on the roster. But having said that, if it's okay, but I still think they got to come out of this draft with more than one, at least two, and the minimum of two wide receivers that have got a chance to crack the 53. That's hard to do when you get down into the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round. That's hard to find a guy on the offensive side of the ball. Defense, you can do it once in a while. Offense, it's hard. It's hard to do, unless it's one of the spots like a running back where nobody takes them high. It's hard to get on the field as an offensive player in this league coming out of the fourth, fifth, and sixth round, particularly in a skill position. Unless there's a massive injury rash on your roster, that kind of thing. You can do it on the defensive side. Yeah, I don't know. Cooper DeGene, I'd get in my mind around it. He's a good player. And like we said, there's going to be some guys on this board at 28 that we've been talking about. There's going to be a bunch of fans on the Bills bandwagon. They're going to be like, yeah, that's exactly the guy I wanted. He's going to be there. The guy they wanted is going to be there. For some Bills fans, because we're all over the map. But I don't know. If there's like six wideouts off the board or seven wideouts off the board, oh, I'll be puking in the sink.
Yeah, I get it.
I mean, they may not even take one with, I don't know. They may not take anybody if only four guys are off the board. I don't know. But man, oh, man. They're going to trade up a couple spots. They're going to get their boy, and I'm going to be happy.
And it's probably got to be with an NFC team, because no AFC team is going to want to help the Bills. Everybody in the AFC knows the Bills need a receiver. Who's helping them?
Yeah, nobody.
Right? Like Seattle at 16, and look, I wouldn't completely rule out quarterback, but they just traded for Sam Howell. So, I don't know. Are they going to draft one, too, at 16? You know, I think they wait.
Maybe the Rams will do it. Now they're getting first-round draft picks back. Maybe they trade back.
It's the first-round pick for the Rams since 2016.
And they could trade back to use it. But then you got to go all the way to Philly and Minnesota at 22-23, Dallas at 24, Green Bay at 25, Tampa Bay at 26, Arizona at 27. Those are all NFC teams. And none of them would bat an eye at helping the Buffalo Bills out. But – they don't start until 22. That's five picks. six picks, I guess.
Yeah.
So I, you know, how much is that going to help? That's where they're going to go. It's going to be from 22 through 26, 27, and they're going to trade up. That's my call. Let me put that on the
small move up.
Small move up. I think that's the most likely scenario.
We want to remind you the OBL Friday fan mailbag is open for you to submit any question you have on your mind at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or you can send us your question on the tweet sheet at 1BillsLive. We're going to quickly whip around the NFL, which is brought to you by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, we've been talking about what NFL GMs are saying. A lot of the NFL GMs around the league had their pre-draft press conference yesterday, including Chargers new GM, Joe Hortiz, who said, "I need an attractive offer if I'm moving out of our pick at five." Now, you know, Chargers GM Joe Hortiz is hoping that Arizona does not move out at four, takes Marvin Harrison Jr., which could then set off a frenzy of offers to Joe Hortiz and the Chargers at five for any quarterback needy team looking to get the fourth quarterback off the board if they like them that much. So chances are if Arizona stays put at four, takes Marvin Harrison Jr., Joe's going to get exactly what he wants, a very attractive trade offer.
How delicious would it be if the Chicago Bears take Caleb Williams, the Washington Commanders take an unexpected guy like J.J. McCarthy.
Mm.
And then the Patriots take Marvin Harrison Jr., which, by the way,
with no one to throw to him?
Right. Which, you know, Bill Belichick might have done that.
He would have taken a lot.
Then Arizona and Los Angeles, the Chargers and Cardinals, would be
flummoxed.
Oh, my gosh. They'd be raking in draft picks for people to get up into those spots because nobody thought those guys would get out of there. You know?
Yeah.
The other, like Drake May and
Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels.
It'll be interesting what happens there.
It's really interesting.
Meanwhile, the New England Patriots, their GM, Elliott Wolf, said yesterday, they're open to anything, including trading up or down. Do we think the Patriots go up to two and try to flip-flop with Washington? I don't know. I mean, unless you only like two guys, I guess that would be the only reason to go up
maybe
one.
And it depends on the price of Washington.
We saw the Chicago Bears do that. They went up from 3 to 2 and gave up a lot to do it and took Mitchell Trubisky.
Oof.
I believe the trade, if I remember right, was with San Francisco. And I think San Francisco took Solomon Thomas or somebody, a defensive lineman, with the next pick at 3.
Yeah.
So it's not unprecedented. The difference is the team ahead of them wasn't looking for a quarterback.
Right.
Washington presumably is, especially after trading Sam Howell. So I think that would be a difficult thing to pull off. But
right.
Elliott Wolf is open to anything, he says.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And all these teams are going to take all the time they have on the clock to make the pick. Chicago, the pick Chicago's going to make is a foregone conclusion in Caleb Williams. Washington, it looks like it's going to be Drake May, right?
Some people believe that. Jayden I don't think
Daniels.
Anybody knows.
Anybody
really know?
No.
Besides Adam Peters, their GM?
Right.
I don't think so.
And then you've got New England. So I don't know. There's going to be some – it feels like it's too common now not to have four different teams picking who are going to pick in the top 10, not pick in the top 10.
Yeah.
Because they can get so much help for their roster if they trade out.
Yeah. Top 10 is going to be fun. Speaking of fun, Jason Kelce was called an imbecile by his brother, Travis, on the latest edition of their podcast because he lost his Super Bowl 52 ring in a pool of Skyline chili. Don't worry, we'll explain. So essentially what happened was Jason Kelce was at a show called the Great Lumbaby Games. It's a live show that they host, and teams compete in basically ridiculous games. One challenge saw participants wading through pools of Skyline Chili, popular Cincinnati dish. These two guys are from, they went to University of Cincinnati. And they had to search for replica Super Bowl rings tied to socks in this vat of Skyline Chili, which replica for those Super that don't Bowl. Know, it's spaghetti with chili on top. It's got to be the dumbest concept for a food or a meal I've ever heard of. Here's the catch. One of the rings tied to a sock in this vat of Skyline Chili was actually Kelce's real Super Bowl ring, which he won, as we know, when the Eagles beat the Patriots in 2018. They get to the end of the event, and his ring has not been found. They have yet to find it. Everything that was in the vat of chili has been thrown away. So Kelce has assumed that his Super Bowl ring is in a landfill somewhere in the Cincinnati tri-state area. And after relaying this full story on his podcast, his brother Travis basically called him an imbecile. So basically he said, the ring is officially gone. We've put the insurance claim in. He goes, but I think the insurance company might have some things to say about whether they're going to cover that. So, Steve, pretend you're the insurance company and Jason Kelce calls you and says, yes, I'd like to put a claim in. I've lost my Super Bowl 52 ring. Oh, that's terrible, Mr. Kelce. How did that happen? Well, we were running a game show and we had this vat of Skyline Chili. You're familiar with that? And we put rings in there tied to socks, but we couldn't find it. So I'd like to file a claim for a lost ring. There is no way any insurance company is covering that. You deliberately threw it in a vat.
It has to be lost. Some policies are like, it has to be lost, it can't be stolen. Because if it's stolen and it's got, it'll turn up someplace.
Yeah.
Like Joe Namath's Hall of Fame rings bounced around the country 20 times. You know? Hmm. Not Hall of Fame ring, Super Bowl ring. If it's lost, you got to claim. If it's stolen, sometimes you don't, or maybe it's backward. That's just the way I understand it. I think that's right. You gotta say it was lost.
Those rings are like $1 million.
No, they're not $1 million, but they're thousands.
Several hundred thousand dollars.
Maybe several hundred, but yeah, they're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Depend. And what they do now?
I mean,
is they're
Patriots.
Like, yeah.
Super Bowl 51 ring, Robert Kraft, you know, he's got six yeah, Super Bowl Lombardi trophies on it. He said his was just over $1 million.
Wow, that's
a lot. I take that back. It was auctioned off at just over $1 million.
Right. Right.
I mean, there's a lot of diamonds on those things.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we're going to get tweeted at by some insurance people, which is fine. You can straighten me out.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah, but don't you have to know that the only way that you're not going to damage it, because you're not going to wear it like, you know, lifting weights or, you know, chopping wood or something, right?
Right, because you're presumably not wearing it when you're doing that stuff, I would like to think. But, man, talk about a bad decision.
Yeah, that's...
Yeesh.
Yeah, well...
Like, we've are you even letting the, that thing out of your sight?
We've seen Highmark Stadium, in Highmark Stadium, you know, Jason Kelce's ability to make poor decisions.
Dude. That is true.
So
you're not wrong.
So, you know, his judgment was in question from the beginning. But, yeah, it's his ring. Let him do what he wants. And I get it, too. If there's a bunch of – you figure somebody's going to be, you know, somebody's going to be in charge of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Don't you do something to make sure that doesn't happen? Take some precaution?
You would like to think.
First of all, you don't put your ring in a vat of chili, but still.
A pool of chili, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, there you go.
I think Travis was right. His brother's an idiot. Yeah, well. We have to take a break here because when we come back, It is the final mock draft watch of the pre-draft campaign. With the draft next week, we bring in Bill Seam reporter Maddie Glab to break down the final numbers on the mock draft watch, the most popular positions, the most popular names. You name it, we've got it. All the data next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and our Bills team reporter, Maddie Glab, for the final mock draft watch before 2024 NFL draft next Thursday. All the tabulations have been made. All the mock drafts have been tracked. What do we have, 129 in all?
We have 129, but Brownie, we have one more coming out on Tuesday, I believe it is. So
for
we have one more to make it 10 total.
Okay.
So we've tracked nine so far, or done nine mock draft watches so far. That means
so
we have tracked 130 mock drafts. Woo!
Let's go.
That's a big number.
It is a big number.
And
it's that season, though.
And look, we've been down this path before, so we'll just touch on it briefly. But overwhelmingly, it has been receiver from the jump in terms of most popular position mocked to the Bills. Then the Diggs trade happened, and it turned into a veritable landslide.
Yes. Wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver is what we have seen since the Bills traded Stephon Diggs. And as of late, we've seen the Bills trade up in mock drafts to go get different wide receivers. The one that we've seen the most is Brian Thomas Jr. He is starting to be a favorite again, mocked to the Bills. Right next to Brian Thomas Jr., though, is Adonai Mitchell from Texas. These two wide receivers go back to back to back to back when you're looking at how people are mocking wide receivers to the Bills. If you look in totality, out of the 129 that we have tracked, Brian Thomas Jr. has been mocked to the Bills 33 times. Adonai Mitchell has been mocked to the Bills 32 times. 99 times a wide receiver has been mocked to Buffalo. That is more than 77% of the mock drafts.
77 of the 129.
Out of every four mock drafts put us with a wide out.
More than that. 77%.
And the other 25% of the people don't know what they're doing.
Well, defensive lineman and defensive back, right? Those are your other two possibilities, which is what we were just discussing earlier.
It gets less and less likely. But here's the thing, too. I think Brownie's right, and I don't know whether this is pre-draft angst on my part, that I think there's going to be a ton of wideouts gone, and you're going to have to trade up to get A.D. Mitch. You're going to have to trade up to get Brian Thomas Jr., Troy Franklin. You may have to trade up to get Troy Franklin or Xavier Worthy.
We've got to lobby to have more people take offensive tackles. I think we have to start calling some teams.
And edge rushers.
This offensive tackle class was awesome this year. You'd be crazy not to come out of the first round with one.
I was on the phone with Cynthia Freeland yesterday preparing for a draft story that we're going to have go out next week. She said she would not be surprised if she sees eight offensive tackles go off the board in the first round.
That would
break a record. The previous record was seven offensive tackles being drafted in the first round. She believes that there are just so many teams that have offensive tackle, offensive lineman needs, and the talent in this year's draft class, specifically speaking about offensive tackle, is too good for a lot of teams to pass up on.
Well, that would be great.
You think about it, most teams, particularly in the AFC, have an established guy that they're not one of these teams. Now, certainly at the bottom, the Patriots – who else? Denver,
Cincinnati
Vegas.
Needs a tackle.
Yes, but I'm talking about quarterbacks.
Oh, quarterbacks.
All these teams have a quarterback that most of them have. 13 or 14 of the AFC teams all have quarterbacks. You got to protect the guy.
Yeah.
And they all need that. Now, the Bills are set for a minute, but they're unique.
And they just signed Lyle Collins. So
they're unique.
They don't need
Cincinnati needs one. Jacksonville could use some help. Miami, Cleveland, Houston, Kansas City.
Yep. So
Baltimore.
That's good.
They all need
him.
Let's
go. That might mean that some wide receivers get pushed down to Buffalo. If offensive tackles and quarterbacks go off the board at a heavy amount in the first 20 picks, you could see some wide receivers falling to Buffalo. The name that I think of falling is Brian Thomas Jr. I don't think Rome Odunze is going to be available at number 20 for the Bills.
If those receivers start to slide, Maddie – like Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, if those guys start to drop like into the second 10 instead of the top 10, it could happen, I guess, if teams do something I expected, particularly if teams start jumping into the first round, if those teams like at number what we've been talking about, the Minnesotas of the world, the Denvers and Las Vegas has tried to get up there to get one of those quarterbacks.
Oh, that could push people down. I still don't know if the receivers are getting...
People are conjecturing that 10. The New England Patriots have such a depleted roster, they're going to trade back and accumulate picks and wait for a quarterback. So, all that stuff's
like
on the
quarterback. Get the quarterback. Figure the rest of it out later. Quarterback's the hardest thing to find.
Believe me. Bro, I know.
I was chuckling over here when Maddie was talking because the three of us, like, we should all be committed. We're trying to speak this into existence.
Make it happen.
We are. This is kind of sorry. Like, this is where we are. We are so desperate for a receiver that we're trying to speak
into existence the
scenarios that'll make
it happen. Maybe Roma Dunze drops to 11 and the Bills somehow get up to number 11 without having to trade away a future first round pick.
Seriously.
So all of our hopes and dreams are dashed and we're stuck at 28 or whatever, and all the guys are gone. And the best edge rusher, like Leatu Latu, is there from UCLA.
I wouldn't be mad at that.
He's good.
He's talented. He's got really a pass good. Rushing. I think the one thing that he has that a lot of these other guys in the draft at his position do not have is a very deep pass rush repertoire. Like, you have a lot of these guys are just uber talented physically.
Right.
So they don't need to use a lot of pass rush tools to win in college. So they don't. Like Job Robinson, who's ranked right behind Latu, he's kind of a one-trick pony. He wins with speed because he's faster than every offensive tackle in football. That doesn't
work. College
football, yeah. That doesn't work in the NFL. Offensive tackles are too good, and they know if you are a speed guy and you don't have much else, they just set up and adjust to make sure they take care of your speed around the arc. Latu has a repertoire.
Latu reminds me of Jalen Phillips from the Dolphins.
Who also started his career at UCLA.
A 6'5 athlete who he'd be a good athlete if he was 5'9, not 6'5. He's one of those dudes. Mm. And, man, I like what he looks like.
And those two guys have another thing in common. Both medically retired from football. Right. Jalen Phillips due to a series of concussions. Latu due to a neck injury. But then got medically cleared and returned to football. Same thing with Phillips after taking a year off.
What do you know about Latu?
Yeah, Leatu Latu. I think he is an all-around athlete. The finesse is there with the moves that he puts on tape. He has creativity with the way that he plays the position. He makes playing edge rusher look easy. I love the way that he plays the run and the pass. He's good at shedding blocks. He's strong with the way that he can blow past offensive linemen. He led the nation in tackles for loss per game with 1.8 last season. He also had 13 sacks and 21.5 TFLs. I think this is someone who could grow into a very talented player at the next level. The question about Latu, though, is the medical. Mm-hmm. Do teams believe that he's truly okay? He had to medically retire at Washington, but he was great at UCLA. Are teams willing to take a chance on him in the first round with what's on tape, with what you think you can get out of that athlete?
Well, and that's the thing, because if the medical, because if the medical's not there, he's probably a top 10 pick, top 15 at worst.
Totally. Right.
But because of the medical, you're kind of dependent upon what your doctors say. Like, there might be some NFL doctors that say, too big a risk. If you want to take him in the third round, fine. But do not use the first-round pick on this guy. Or you might have another doctor say, this is a one-contract guy.
I'll say
after 4 years, he might,
If you're thinking about a guy with this talent, if he's this talented and he would be a top 10 pick in most drafts without the medical, it's not just one doctor. It's not just your doctor. It's their doctor, that doctor, and the best doctor and the other doctor. And you're also calling the doctor that originally made him retire. I mean, you've got 50 opinions.
You're canvassing the thing.
And you're listening to all of them. So you got to sort through that. So if they, if somebody does pick him, and somebody's going to, there's no question about it. He's going in this draft. If somebody picks him, it's because they are comfortable with the physicality. And he, and he's, you know, he stayed healthy at UCLA without a problem.
And Maddie mentioned his production, which is well known, but he was productive lining up on the left and the right side. This isn't just like a right defensive end or a left. The guy played on both sides. They flipped him around to get matchups and stuff, and he won from both sides, which sometimes for a college player is easier said than done.
I want to bring up one trade that we saw in the mock draft watch, the latest round that we tracked. From Chris Trapasso from CBS Sports, a good friend of ours.
Friend of the show.
Yes. Yeah. He has us trading number 28, number 60, and a 2025 first round pick. That's all going to Atlanta for
pick eight,
pick number eight, and pick number 109 in the fourth round. We're trading up to get wide receiver Malik Nabers out of LSU. This guy is 6'0", 200 pounds. He's a consensus All-American. First team All-SEC last season. He is scary with the ball in his hands. You can line him up anywhere, and he will win the one-on-one matchups. His strength shows with the way he can make catches in traffic. He's a true separator and an explosive receiver. 78% of his catches went for a first down or a touchdown. He had two straight seasons with 1,000 yards and had 14 touchdowns in 2023. Do you think it's worth trading that to go up and get a receiver like Malik Nabers?
28, 60, and a 2025
first round pick.
Yes, 2025 one.
That's a lot.
That's our first round pick this year, our second round pick this year, and a first round next year.
Well, it's moving up 20 spots in the first round, though, too. I mean, he's going from 28 to 8.
I don't see us doing it. He hates giving up future ones.
And we wouldn't be picking again until pick 128.
You're done on day two.
Yeah,
you're done on day two.
Right.
Now, with that trade, you would have 3 fourth-round picks and 3 fifth-round picks, which you already have in your possession. So you have 3 fives right now and 2 fours. This trade would give you an additional 4. So with 3 fours, you could easily get back into the third round if you wanted to and make a day two pick. I don't know if you're making 2 day two picks, though. So,
well, you don't have any day two picks now.
Well, no, but I'm saying you could probably trade for one. I don't know if you're trading to get back in twice. So you got a quiet day too. Man, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm kind of with you. I
can't do it. I don't see Brandon giving up a future one. He didn't even do it for Josh Allen. I can't see him doing it for a receiver. I just can't.
So you guys right now where we sit, you would rather remain at number 28, move back, or maybe move up into the teens to go get a guy rather than move up into the top 10 to go get one of the best three.
I said this earlier on the show today. I think if Brian Thomas, for some reason, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if for some reason he gets past the Colts at 15,
okay,
I think Brandon's on the phone.
Malik Nabers is a great player, and he comes from a school that
the toughest conference
adds,
in football,
that adds some validity to expectations, because there's been a guy coming out. There's been guys coming out of this program for the last half dozen years that are studs at that position. So you think when you draft a guy out of there who has played as well as he has in that system against that conference in that schedule, that he's the real deal,
right?
And you're giving up the chance to pick at 28, at 60, and next year at hopefully 32. If you pick up at 32 next year, nobody cares what you did this year.
What if he's the missing piece to having an amazing season next year?
What if Latu is the missing piece and you pass on him and pick this dude?
You could play this game anyway. You could play with any position. It's so hard at this point, a week away from the NFL draft. I am down for whatever happens. I just want this team to be better in 2024. Yeah. And if Malik Nabers gets us there,
and he gets us
to the promised land,
I think the depth of the receiver class, I think it doesn't make a move like that an absolute necessity. Yes, Nabers is an outstanding player. There's no doubt about it. I think the depth of the receiver class, which may be the best we've ever seen in the last 25 years, I think that keeps him from
Yeah, there's a bunch of solid pros further down the line for a wide receiver, and I'm not saying they're not, you know, they're not Jamar Chase and Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Juniors and that kind of thing. But there's some really solid professional football players in this draft at wide receiver.
I want to say one quick point on that. There's a lot of – with some of these wide receivers who are in the second tier of talent, you're projecting on what they can do at the next level. But with a quarterback like Josh Allen, you may be able to get the best out of that second tier.
Yeah, one of the two best quarterbacks in football. He can elevate the players around him, which, again – it kind of says, you know what, going all the way up there and getting rid of all this draft capital, that's not an absolute necessity. You know, we can live with guy B, C, D, or E, and he'll be fine. So great stuff all pre-draft season here, Maddie, and collecting all of this data for the mock drafts. We appreciate it.
I love it.
As Maddie said, one last.
Maybe we'll try and do one more next week.
Yeah, yeah. As we said, one last mock draft coming your way on BuffaloBills.com next week.
Mm-hmm.
So keep an eye out for that, although I can't see much changing between since the Diggs trade. But that's Bills team reporter Maddie Glad with Mock Draft Watch. We'll take a break. Be back with more in a moment on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, after a spirited discussion on mock drafts and what could unfold on draft night number one.
Goodness.
It is cray-cray.
Oh.
And there's a multitude of things that could obviously happen, largely to be predicated on the quarterbacks, we would assume, but it could also largely be determined by when these three top receivers come off the board as well.
If
it gets accelerated, you know, because I just looked at a mock on ESPN.com, and it went Harrison 4, Nabers 5 to the Chargers, and then Odunze 6 to the Giants. 4-5-6. That ain't good.
It's going to happen like that somewhere.
But I mean, here's the thing. Even if that happens.
Those three guys are coming off in the top 10.
Even if that happens, you just have to get Brian Thomas past the Jets at 10. Because if you do that, then you have Minnesota at 11. They have other interests. Denver at 12. And the Raiders at 13. I think you're safe through that stretch. Saints at 14. They need line help on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So now you get to the Colts at 15. That's why I believe if you can get Brian Thomas past the Jets at 10, maybe they take Bowers. In a perfect world, Bowers and Brian Thomas are still on the board when you get to the Colts, because then I think the Colts would take Bowers, because they just took
maybe
they just took Josh Downs last year. So,
well, they've got
he gets past the Colts at 15. Brandon Bean's on the phone.
Mox, I'm looking at
calling
Colts
Seattle.
Might go corner. The Colts need some help on that side of the ball,
yeah.
So they may not pay,
that's
take
true.
A receiver either. And they've got
you're right about
Michael
that.
Pittman in the, over there as well. So,
so I that's why and in. Even a better scenario, you've got the quarterbacks in the second tier, you know, getting
right.
jockeyed for at 11, 12, and 13, and they're all consumed with quarterbacks. And if all those quarterbacks go, now a team like Seattle at 16, which may consider quarterback, I know they traded for Sam Howell, Geno Smith in the last year of his deal, but maybe you can convince Seattle, you know, if – let's just say Penix is off the board already. And they're like, well, there's no point in staying here.
Maybe.
You know? I mean, I guess they could take an offensive tackle at 16 if they wanted, but
right.
maybe they're apt to move down, and you can get on the horn with them and do something. It'll be interesting for sure. We're going to talk more about the draft in hour number two with our good friend Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, as we talk edge rushers with him next on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hey.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Here we are, hour number two on a Friday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live, and joined once more prior to the draft by senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, as we dive in to the edge rushing group, knowing that, well, if the receiver value gets blown up in round one for the Bills, edge rusher could be a consideration. Greg, how we doing?
We're doing great. You know, I've started to actually think, I don't normally do this, Brownie. I started to think about, you know, guys who are going to go early and how the draft might play out. Normally, I just love the process of watching players. You guys know I don't do mocks and I don't make lists. But I think it's very possible that seven of the first 10 players are going to be quarterbacks and wide receivers, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question. It could be a record-setting season for wideouts in the first round, quarterbacks in the first round, all of that.
Yeah, that's going to push people back, you know? I think after you get sort of past the 10th pick, it gets really, really intriguing.
Yeah, the top 10 is going to have a lot to say about what happens later in terms of position runs and everything else.
Yep.
But let's dive into some of these edge prospects here. We'll begin with Jared Verse, the Florida State kid, first-team All-ACC, 9-sack season last year. What would you call his strengths, Greg?
Power. He's a first-step explosive power edge player who's better in a three-point stance than he is standing up. When he stands up, he has false steps and wasted motion. When his hand's in the ground, he comes off the ball, no false steps, and he's really explosive. He attacks the edge. He's a speed-to-power guy. He's purposeful. I think he has a plan. Because all he has to do is get them out of phase, get an offensive tackle out of phase just a little bit, get them off balance just enough, and then he executes that speed to power, and he does not need a long runway to generate power. He can do it in a confined amount of space, and that's a really important trait to have. But his game is built on power.
And so you think a power guy like that would be just as good in the run as the pass rush?
I think there's a run element to his game for sure, Steve. I mean, I think he's got the strength. He's got the hand quickness to play off contact in the run game and make plays. He's quick in a short area. But obviously the pass rush is what he is. And you talk to offensive linemen and they will tell you if they feel they can be beaten by speed to power, it clearly changes the way they pass set.
And then just watching him a little bit myself, Greg, there were a couple of moves that kind of caught my eye. He's got a swim move that seems to be effective for him. And he's also got that stack and pull through move where he kind of grabs the jersey of the tackle and he just pulls himself through. That seemed to be two of the ones he likes to turn to the most. How varied would you say his repertoire is?
I wouldn't say it's extremely varied, you know, and I think you can always work on that. But I think the power element as the starting point is a better element to start with than the guys who are, you know, just bendy and work off the edge. Because, again, I was fortunate enough last year to go to the O-line Masterminds event with Duke Mannyweather down in Texas. And you hear all these offensive tackles talk about how they are more concerned about the speed to power guys right off the bat because it just changes things for them if they know they can be physically beaten. The guys who are a little bit of the dancers, who are the quicker guys, they always feel that they can handle. But the speed to power is harder.
So as you talk about the rest of these guys, one of the more intriguing guys out there is a highly talented guy out of UCLA, Leiatu Latu. He seems to me, and I was saying this just in the last segment when we had Maddie on, if he was 5'9", he'd still be a really good-looking athlete, right?
Oh, yeah.
But he's got the neck injury, and once you set aside the history of maybe what happened with he retired once because of a neck injury, now he's back and he's played extremely well, how good can he be on the upside?
Yeah, I obviously can't speak to the medical, you know, right, just being a doctor, although I have spoken to some GMs who say that it's possible that he might not be on 12 or 15 draft boards because of the injury. So we don't know that. But let's just evaluate the player. For me, and again, not making a list, but I was most intrigued by him. I think you're dealing with a guy that can bend. I think he's got enough power, not as powerful as Verse, but enough power. And I got to tell you, I thought that for a college pass rusher, he had a lot of tools in the toolbox. He was the most refined in terms of his moves, his hand usage. He's relentlessly competitive. To me, he was the overall number one edge pass rusher. And I'm going to say something now, and I want people to understand what I'm about to say. I'm going to compare him to someone who I'm comparing him to when this player came out of college, because the player I'm going to compare him to is arguably a top three pass rusher in the league. Some might think he's the best pass rusher in the league, but he reminded me of TJ Watt when Watt came out of Wisconsin. And Latu, they're about the same size in terms of, you know, dimensionally, and they're very similar to me.
Yeah, and the thing about him that you don't always see with pass rushers is he's an anticipatory player. Because there'll be times where he'll be on the rush and he'll see something in the backfield, or he'll realize he's not going to get there. He'll actually stop his rush, get into the passing lane, and bat a pass down instead.
Yeah.
I mean, he had two interceptions last year too.
Yeah, no, he's a really good player. I mean, he's got size, he's got length. You know, he's explosive. As I said, he's advanced and refined with his hand usage, multiple moves in his arsenal. They dropped him into coverage quite a bit, as you just said, Brownie. I mean, this guy's a really, really good athlete. To me, other than perhaps not being super powerful, I don't know if he had a defined weakness where he said, man, he just can't do this at all. You know, power, like I said, he's certainly not the most powerful guy, but I wouldn't view that as a weakness.
So is he more comfortable, and I know you're comparing him to different guys in the league, is he more comfortable with his hand off the ground or in a three-point? Would he be okay in a 4-3 defensive end, or does he need to stand up?
Guy.
More of a stand-up guy?
That's his game. More. Again, I'm not sure, you know, with his hand on the ground, how comfortable he is. I don't know the answer to that, but he really stood up a lot at UCLA.
All right, next guy on the list is probably the Ferrari of the group, Chop Robinson, who pretty much blew up Lucas Oil Stadium with his workout, as anticipated. Guy's all about speed.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly the most sudden and explosive of all these guys. At this point, that's his game. I don't know if he has a lot more to his game at this point. I made the point that he needs to develop a much wider array of moves and counters to become a higher level pass rusher at the next level. To me, and I don't know if this fits the Bills, he's a guy you'd want to move around. You know, obviously he's an edge player at his core, but you get to third down, you want to move him around. You want to make him a stand-up joker. You want to give him a runway to use that speed and velocity. He's a guy, to me, that, you know, that's what you'd want to do with him. He's nowhere near as powerful as Micah Parsons, but in a sense, you'd want to use him like that, where you line him up in different places in those pass rushing situations, as opposed to just putting him on the edge with his hand in the ground.
And just real quick, Greg, because some people look at him and say, oh, well, he's not very big. Is he a better fit as a 3-4 outside linebacker? But he's not really long enough to do that, right?
Well, I mean, his arm length is not long. That's, you know, people do look at arm length. I find that out more and more each year. I mean, he's 6'3", 254. He's not a little guy. And obviously, he's got tremendous athletic testing measurables. But, no, his arm length isn't long. I don't know. You know, that'd be a really interesting question for a, you know, D-line / linebacker coach, whether he could be a stand-up linebacker. I mean, he's not an off the ball linebacker, if that's what you're asking. But he's not that for sure.
And then let's go on to a defensive end prospect, Darius Robinson out of Missouri. He was another first team all SEC, had, you know, 14 tackles for loss, 8.5 sacks. What are your thoughts on Darius Robinson?
Yeah, I really like this kid. Steve, you know, you played just a few years ago, obviously, back in the day when, think of the old school strong side DNs in a 4-3, you know, that would line up over the tight end. this guy, if he was playing back then, this guy would be the poster child for that. This guy's game is he's got tremendous length and mass throughout his body. His game reflects those attributes. He's got really strong hands, strong grip, arm extension. He locks out. He sets the edge. I think he'll develop more as a pass rusher the more he plays. I really like Darius Robinson a lot. I mean, you don't see a lot of 6'5", 285 DNs these days. Tremendous arm length. Really, you know, you wouldn't call a guy that big sudden, but he's a very good athlete for his size. I mean, those guys that big, you can always say they're a little stiff and tight, but it's just they're very big. You know, guys like that are not going to look like and move like Chop Robinson. This guy, the more I watched him, and I think he's the kind of guy you have to keep watching because he's not going to make those dynamic, spectacular, explosive plays where you go, oh, my God, look at that. But you keep watching him and watching him and watching him, and snap after snap after snap, he's just a really good player.
Yeah, and I don't know, like body type-wise, he looks like Jadeveon Clowney.
Well, he's bigger than Jadeveon Clowney.
Is he? Okay.
Oh, wow.
But he's kind of.
Clowney was 270. He's almost the exact same measurables as Cam Jordan when he came out of Cal.
Okay. Yeah.
Jordan might have been just a little quicker, naturally quicker, but Robinson's measurables are almost exactly the same as Cam Jordan's.
Yeah. And I would say, and maybe this is because he's not super explosive, being, you know, 280 something pounds. But I like how when he has the play, when the play is there to be made, you know, you see so many edge rushers blow by the quarterback or whiff on the ball carrier. I don't see that with him nearly as much as you do with some other players in this class.
Yeah, he's, like I said, I just think he's a really good player. I think he's solid, efficient, consistent. He may not be the kind of guy, certainly early in his career, that gets, you know, 12 or 13 sacks. Could he develop into that? Possibly. But I also think he'll be the kind of guy you could line up year one and he'd play meaningful snaps and be good at what he's asked to do.
Yeah. As we go on down, let's talk about edge prospect Austin Booker out of Kansas. Brownie likes this guy.
Yeah, I went back and forth on him as I kept watching him. I mean, the guy hasn't played a lot of football. That's the thing. He only played 505 snaps in his entire career at Kansas. So what you have to assess is not what he is now, but what you think he can become. So he's a classic projection, which is mostly what the draft is. But some guys, you know, they play a lot. He has not played a lot of football. He's long. He's got plus athleticism and movement. He shows in flashes, both as a run defender and pass rusher. It's in his body to become a quality edge pass rusher. It's not there yet. You know, right now he lacks play strength. Can he gain weight? It looks like when you watch him that he has room in his body to gain some weight, and ideally he doesn't lose the quickness that he has. But right now he's not a strong player. I think he was 240 at the combine, and that's, you know, obviously he needs to get bigger than that because at 240 he'd have to be a stand-up guy, not a hand-in-the-ground guy. I think that he showed enough flashes on tape where you believe that he could develop into a quality edge player at the next level. I wouldn't say that's a certainty, though. So I think he's a clear case of projecting what you think a player could become.
Yeah, he's got tools, but there's some development that has to happen there. So that probably puts him like late day two, early day three. That's probably where.
I mean, when was the last time there was a guy coming out that's being talked about that played 500 snaps in college?
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, Greg Rousseau was only a one-year starter, and he was a first-round pick.
Yeah, but the thing is that Booker. He was a one-year starter, but he played football.
Yeah.
Booker's only played 500 snaps.
Right.
That is
a small.
That's like a training camp back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, you know. So that's. We'll see. He's one of those guys. Maybe in 3 years we'll be saying he's a great player, Brownie. You know, that's the thing. Those are the kinds of decisions that people with much larger investment portfolios than me will have to make.
Yeah, but the guys like Austin Booker, you're talking about maybe a fourth rounder or fifth rounder for him, right?
Well, again, if you feel really confident based on the kid, based on studying everything about him, doing the kind of due diligence, Steve, that I can't do because I don't work for a team, and you feel really, really good, you could see him as a day two pick for sure, because okay, really, really good might mean he could become a really explosive pass rusher.
Like what kind of pro player would his game be similar to?
Well, he's certainly not as bendy and as flexible as Brian Burns, who just signed with the Giants. But in terms of just kind of the length, you know, and again, that's not a direct apples-to-apples comparison. And I didn't know you were going to ask me that, so I don't want people to think, you know, that just popped into my head. But I think you're talking about a long, leaner guy that ideally can bend, but also has some explosiveness in his body.
Right. Yeah.
I know he wasn't on our list, Greg. Did you see Chris Braswell, the Alabama kid?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So what do you make of him, and how do you avoid falling into traps of, you know, looking at his older tape and knowing he's on the other side of a guy that was a top five pick and that kind of stuff? And then ultimately, where do you come down on him knowing, you know, he had a teammate in Dallas Turner on the other side? How do you kind of gauge his productivity and ability?
Ultimately, you know, Brownie, not relevant to me. I'm looking at the player.
Okay.
I think he's a lowercase Jared Verse. I think his game is built on power. I thought he got better as the year progressed. His speed to power conversion is really good, and he challenged the high side. He threatened the edge, and then he would drive right into O tackles with velocity, explosive power, explosive closing burst to the quarterback, set the edge. The guy who in some ways he reminded me of, and again, now I'm going back a few years, but, you know, I've been doing this a long time. The guy I'm about to mention weighed a little more coming out of college. He was a small school guy, but he's developed into one of the better pass rushers in the league. He reminded me of Matthew Judon coming out of Grand Valley State, who was a fifth-round pick.
Yeah, to me, right. I feel like if he develops a pass rush arsenal, he could be a really productive player. I think that's the thing that's missing for him. He's got to get an arsenal.
I agree, and it's funny you say that because I said that he needs to develop a wide array of pass rush moves and counters to become a truly effective edge pass rusher in the league. But, again, you're starting with power, and the guy's improved every year. He was a fun guy to watch. I think he'll play in the league. The question is, what will he become? Another guy you sort of have to project in your mind, you know, based on your due diligence, what do you think he can become? But I like his tape.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're probably not going to get a chance to talk to you because the draft is going to happen on Thursday of this next week, and this will probably be our last chance to touch base with you before that happens. So I'm just going to ask you, so you've looked at a gazillion guys in this draft. Two things. One, give this draft class a grade at the top, and pick your guy.
Well, I think that it's a wide receiver and offensive tackle draft in terms of probably the most depth. And then if I had to pick a guy that I really, really like, and again, I don't know where he's going to get drafted. I believe he'll be a first-round pick, but I really like Byron Murphy, the D-tackle from Texas. I just love – this guy to me is just a really, really good prospect. That's just a name because, Steve, I didn't know what you were going to ask me. So I'm sure if I started looking at a list, but we don't have that kind of time, there'd be plenty of others that stood out to me. But he's just a guy that I just think he's going to be a really, really good player. Like, to me, he's a – and not to say anything negative here about a Buffalo player, but he's just a better Ed Oliver. Like, he's just that kind of – you know, he weighs a little more, but he's that kind of player, you know, with the explosiveness.
Right.
But I just think he's got better overall traits.
Yeah, somebody that big shouldn't be that athletic, but he is.
Oh, my God. And he's so – I mean, you see him take on double teams and the way he just kind of gets down on all fours and then still makes plays, still makes the tackle.
Yeah, it's amazing. Greg, thanks as always. We will catch up with you. Appreciate all the insight on the players. I'm sure you – probably gave yourself a to-do list for about 20 more guys you want to get to before the draft. So
I'm grinding here. I'm grinding.
good luck getting through your list.
All right. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right. That's Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, joining us, going through the edge rushing class. You know, there's some names there. there is a steeper drop-off based on a lot of the draft gurus we've had on the show. There may only be three or four guys that go in round one, perhaps five if there's a run late in the round. You know, maybe Latu, Robinson, and Chop Robinson, and Darius Robinson go in the last 10 picks of the round, 12 picks in the round.
Yeah.
That could happen. You know, but Jared Verse and Dallas Turner are probably the only guys that are going to see the top half of the round.
Right. Yeah, it's there's always a spot for a pass rusher. It's one of those money positions, and but he's Greg's right. Offensive tackles and wide receivers are going to dominate this draft as guys who are going to be immediate guys. And quarterbacks, they always take a minute, right, at least. Even this last year's draft, I mean, C.J. Stroud was an anomaly coming out and leading his team to the playoffs as a rookie. So even though the quarterbacks kind of headline it like they always do, this is an offense. This is a draft about offensive linemen and wideouts. But if you're in a spot with a team where you're kind of set, you could get a guy that could make a difference defensively for you at the edge.
We are going to step aside here, but when we come back, we're ready to take your phone calls, any questions you might have in the OBL Friday fan mailbag about the draft, about a prospect, about the Bills' pick total and what they might do with it, or about the NFL at large. Whatever's on your mind, fire away, or hit us up on the tweet sheet next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker. OBL Friday fan mailbag is open as we are ready to take some of your questions. So we go to the phones, and leading us off today is Ryan in Toronto. What's up, Ryan?
Chris, Steve, I love the show. Well, I have a take. I want to hear your thoughts on it. I mean, you may not like it. But based on Brandon Bean's history of drafting, he has not drafted a wide receiver in the first two rounds ever. Secondly, moving up to get a wide receiver, I think we may lose a lot of capital. And thirdly, I think by sticking to being at number 28, I think we get more bang for the buck with a defensive player instead of a wide receiver. I would just want to hear your thoughts on it.
You may be right. You may be exactly right, Ryan. By the time it gets back to 28, if indeed the Bills are forced to stay at 28, the best player on the board might be – the best three players on the board may all be defenders. You're right. And it is going to be expensive. If they move up, the further they move up, the more outlandishly expensive it's going to be. It's going to be expensive. I agree with you. And I will say this, though. I don't agree with you that it's a philosophical choice that he doesn't ever draft a wide receiver in the first or second round. I think that's more happenstance since he's been here. They traded for Diggs. They had their guy. And everything that was around him was ancillary, so they didn't really need to throw a lot of capital at the wide receiver position once they traded for Steph Diggs. So for 4 years, they've had a guy. And they also drafted Gabe Davis, who they loved and didn't want to lose. So they were more pat there over the last 3 years. And in the first 3 years of his tenure here, before he got Gabe Davis and Steph and those guys, they had multiple other needs that were way outstripped getting a first-round wideout. So while, yes, you're right, it's going to be very expensive to move up. The only way I think they'll do that is if there's a guy they covet. I mean, they think he's a difference maker, and they're not going to be able to sit at 28 and get him. That's the only way I think they'll move.
I think he is right, though. It's too costly to go up into
too
the top 10.
It's too costly to go to the top 10. Absolutely. You're right, Ryan. And I would agree with you on the second 2 points of it. There might be not just one, the best defensive player on the board left when they get to 28, if they're still there. It may be three defensive players, not just one. By that time.
Yeah, because they're already talking about how this year's first round is expected to break the record. 19 is the highest number of offensive players ever taken in round one of any NFL draft, and they are expecting this year's class to shatter that, due in part to the strong offensive tackle class, the strong receiver class, and the strong quarterback class, all offensive players, and you have one of the best tight ends this year in Brock Bowers, who's going to be a first-round pick as well. That's another offensive player. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of offense early in this draft, and that may carry through into the 20s. So we'll have to wait and see. We go to Andy in Tonawanda next. What's up, Andy?
Hi, gentlemen. I have a question for Steve. Steve, if we stay at the 28th pick, like you're saying, some of the receivers is a big run, would it be possible, what is your feelings on this middle linebacker, Wilson, I believe his name is? They say they compare him to like a Kuechly, who was a 9th overall pick for Carolina. And I just wondered if the only thing is, I guess he's had some injuries already.
Yeah, Peyton Wilson you're talking about.
I'm not exactly sure, but I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, Peyton Wilson, if he is the player that Luke Kuechly was from the neck up, I don't care what his physicality is, that he'll be able to play. Luke Kuechly was above the board, not only physically but mentally. That's where his real genius was the fact that he knew what was coming. Certainly, Peyton Wilson is a fast dude. He can scoot, and he's that kind of player. And he may be – in fact, I'll tell you this, he will be on the board when the Bills pick at 28. I don't know what the Bills think about him. I don't know that they're in the market for that. I think they're very happy with Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano. Now, maybe they're a little skittish about Milano's return, and maybe they do want to bolster that, but they also have Dorian Williams, who is also a supreme athlete.
Yeah, I'll just say, as much as I love Edgerrin Cooper, who's the linebacker from Texas A&M, I love Peyton Wilson an eyelash less than him. An eyelash. Because this guy is 6'4", 233, ran a 4.43, tested out of the gym. Because I think his vertical was, I think it might have been 40 or something. I'll have to check. But he is a playmaker in every sense of the word. The problem is the injury history. He had an ACL, and he had a shoulder injury that required surgery. So there's a history there, and he's missed time. But this is a guy who was a team captain. This is a guy who had unbelievable production last season in all 12 starts. In 12 starts, he had 138 tackles, 17.5 for loss at a linebacker position, and 9 pass breakups and 3 interceptions.
Yeah, he's a
player. He is all over the field. Wherever the ball is, he is usually there. And he's got a little attitude to go with it. He drops people and then tells them how much he owns them.
Yeah, he sees it. When it happens on the field, he sees it. And that's, you know.
But because of the injury history, a lot of people see him as a second-round pick. I would expect him to be off the board top half second round. He's too physically gifted and has a big body of work that – I don't think he lasts past the middle of round two.
Right.
So let's go to Steve in Iowa next. What's up, Steve?
Hi, fellas. Love the show. Thanks for taking my call. Ryan kind of stole my thunder a little bit, so I'll ad lib a tad. I think the most valuable thing that we have is the draft capital, so I'm a little bit in favor of trading down and collecting as much as we can in the second round or maybe a lower first round. And I also think that it would be beneficial for the Bills to be looking at defensive and offensive linemen or a defensive player in general. And one of the reasons I say it is because I'm playing off of Bean's comments the other day where I understand this could be a smokescreen, but he seemed to indicate they were set with the receivers. At least, you know, he wanted to give that impression. So I don't know. I think you got to win with the big uglies. What do you guys think?
Yeah, they need a receiver. I'm sorry, Steve.
Yeah.
I wasn't buying that for a second. I know what Brandon Bean's trying to do yesterday and trying to make it sound like it's not an absolute that they have to get a receiver. If they don't get a receiver with one of their first two picks, they're shorthanded. I'm sorry. That's just the way I see it. I can't imagine they see it any differently. They just threw a 100-catch-a-year receiver off the roster in a trade, and their number two guy is in Jacksonville. The only guy that caught passes from Josh Allen who's on the roster right now at the receiver position is Khalil Shakir. That's it. They have to get a receiver. You can talk big uglies all you want. You don't have anybody to catch the football and make plays for you when you need one.
Right.
You got a problem. Now, look, do they need defensive line help? Yes, they do. So you want to talk about the trenches there? I'll listen to that. I'll also listen to trading back at 28 – under this condition, we've been talking for most of the show today about receiver value getting blown up and blown up early. I mean, the latest buzz with less than a week to go before the draft is the top three receivers could be gone by pick 8 or 9, which, you know, it's totally realistic. I mean, we talked about those three guys going in the top 10 anyway, so it doesn't matter where they go. But the fear is that that accelerates the value of Brian Thomas, who then goes earlier as well, presumably somewhere in the top 15. Yeah. And now you're down to A.D. Mitchell, and you're still 13 picks away. So under that scenario, where the receiver value has been blown to smithereens, I am all for trading back and getting somebody in the next tier of receivers and, heck, maybe taking a second swing at 60 at a receiver. If you want to get a defensive lineman, okay, I'll listen to that. But, yeah, your receiver value gets blown to smithereens in round one, I'm all for trading back in round one to round two and picking up a third. Now you got 3 picks on day 2.
As much as we say we're okay with the best player on the board, but here's the thing. The Bills, they've got guys on the roster, no question. They got Curtis Samuel. They got Mac Hollins. They got Khalil Shakir and, of course, Cook and Kincaid. But, you know, you're talking about a team that had 385 of the 385 completions they had last year, 195 of them are out the door with Gabe Davis, Stephon Diggs, Latavius Murray, Deontay Hardy, Trent Sherfield, all these guys, they're all out the door. So it's hard to go into a season with, like Brownie said, that's the biggest glaring thing about it, is that, yeah, you've got some guys that have played, Curtis Samuel, sure, Mac Hollins, okay, but none of them have caught a ball for the Buffalo Bills. And the guys that you've got in the house with, you know, Shorter and the rest, they can't get on the field either. They haven't been able to get on the field. So it gives you – there's nothing to expect from that group, right? There's nothing you can depend on. Certainly they may answer all the questions and say, wow, we didn't know you guys knew something. We didn't. Okay. It doesn't look like that.
Right. Yeah, it's different. There's no question it's different. Let's go to Luke in Silver Creek next. Oop, let me punch him up here. Hang on. What's up, Luke?
Hey, fellas. How we doing?
Good.
So when thinking about the receivers with this class that the Bills have to potentially draft, you know, in the first round and the second round, I've been trying to wrap my head around, like, what type of guy or what qualities that the team is looking for, what Brandon Breen's looking for. I think Josh Allen gave us some insight in his press conference yesterday when he said that last year he reached out to Bean during the draft and said Dalton Kincaid. And a thing that Dalton was known for coming out of Utah was just sure-handedness, you know, a very natural catcher of the football.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I wanted to get y'all's thoughts on who of the guys that the Bills could potentially draft do you think have just very good, sure, natural catching abilities?
Yeah, I would say A.D. Mitchell falls into that category. Had one drop last year. His catch rate is somewhere in the 90s last year. And for his college career, I think it's 93% is his catch rate. Now, obviously, the windows are smaller. There are more contested passes in the NFL. So that would presumably go down. But they did prioritize that when they drafted Khalil Shakir late. He was one of the best catch rate players in the league last year. They prioritized that with Dalton Kincaid. It's about offensive efficiency. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. A.D. Mitchell falls into that category. I believe McConkie is in that category as well. And I know the Washington receiver, Jalen Polk, very sure-handed. He's probably a second-round pick. You know, if the Bills don't get a receiver in round one, that might be a guy to consider at pick 60.
There's guys down the line, like I was looking at Ricky Pearsall's film.
And Pearsall is very sure-handed. Pearsall
is a really sure-handed, but he's like the 15th receiver on the list, right? So you'll probably get a shot at him at 60 or maybe have a – maybe. So, yeah, there's some of these guys in this draft class that are known for that, A.D. Mitchell being one of the top ones, and Polk is another one. So there you have it. And you're right. I agree with you. There's nothing more frustrating to have a guy running free and he stone hands it, you know.
Yeah.
So
and Stephon Diggs' catch rate went down precipitously last year from where it had been the previous 3 years. Maybe it was part of something that the Bills saw, and they were able to stomach parting ways with him. We have to step aside here, but we'll have a chance for a call or two in our final segment next here on an OBL Friday fan mailbag, answering your questions about the draft and the Bills picks and what might happen next here on One Bills Live. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. One segment to go here. Going to crack open the tweet sheet quickly to get some of the questions there. Alex asks, what would you like to see as a success? What would you see as a successful draft for the Bills next week? What do you think, Steve?
Oh, man, you got to come out with players at the right spot. I'd love to get a quality defensive end or a couple of them, a couple of wide receivers, interior defensive linemen. Defensive tackle.
Yeah, so I would say I'd be happy if they come out of the draft with two receivers, preferably one in their first two picks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need defensive line depth, you need safety depth, and you need corner depth. And then you want to get me a running back in the seventh round to be the third running back? Thank you very much. That's a successful draft.
Wide receiver, defensive tackle, edge rushers, as many of those as you can get, plus a bonus pick.
Well, yeah, you need depth on defense. You need linebacker depth. You need safety depth. You need corner depth. You need D-line depth. You need depth at all three levels of the defense. Don't kid yourself.
Two wide receivers, eight defenders. Let's go.
Ed asks, of all the Bills draft picks, how many are going to be studs and how many might be questionable jabronis?
50-50.
Yeah.
It's 50-50.
I mean, they do their homework. They do their homework to reduce that risk, but as we know, it's an inexact science. Dominic asks, if Brandon Bean called you guys on draft day and said, hey, I'll let you choose, move up, give our first round next year and grab a Dunze, stay put, grab the best player available, or move back, grab more draft picks and take the best player available, what would you choose? Well, you're asking us to make that choice in a vacuum, and I don't think that's realistic. I'm not making that choice, Dominic, unless I know what's happened already in front of the Bills. Like, what happened in the first eight picks? Did the two of the top three receivers go already? Did only one go? You know, who moved up into the top 10? These decisions are not made in a vacuum.
I'll say this. If it's like this.
I'm not giving up a future one.
If it's only this one and next year's one, I would think about the Adunze thing. But I don't have a problem doing any of that stuff, staying put and grabbing the best player either. And it depends on how many more picks I got to grab to move back. That's an unknown. So I'd be okay with any of this stuff. If you move back and grab more picks, it better be, you know, I want a third rounder.
You got to know what the situation is before you make a decision like that. And you got to
the specifics matter.
Yeah.
The problem with this is that, as we all know, you're picking horses with conscience. You know, you don't know how these guys are going to be when they get here. They could look great, show up, and be, like you said, jabronis. Or they could just be a throwaway pick and turn into, you know, Troy Polamalu, right? So it's hard to know because you pick these guys, and so much happens to these guys when they get drafted. It changes them.
Well, yeah, and the money will change, too. That's it for us this week. It's draft week next week. We'll see you at 1 on Monday.